Good afternoon. This is the Energy and Utilities Finance and Policy Committee for Thursday, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day. We have a few announcements before we start, and we're missing a few people, but we do have a quorum, so I do want to begin with testimony so we can use as much time as necessary. Welcome, Senator Rarick. Senator Rarick has been added to our committee. Senator Goggin, who is with us today, is no longer on the committee. So he will not have the pleasure of spending jail time with Senator Osmick a couple of times a week. This is the first day of two consecutive hearings on Community Solar Garden. This one is on Senator Goggin's bill. The next 2 days, or on Tuesday, we will hear some additional Community Solar Garden bills and trying to do a little bit of a reform on that. But Senator Goggin's bill, I thought, was first. It should be first as far as taking a removal of the entire program. There are a number of members, or a number of speakers on the list. We will employ our standard semi-controversial bill hearing format that I use, which is 30 minutes will be devoted to people who are in favor of the bill or groups that are in favor of the bill, 30 minutes for people who are not in favor of the bill, then spend up to 30 minutes for senators to be able to ask questions from any of the testifiers. It is my intent to hear the testifiers first and bring them back. So members, if you do have questions for any of the testifiers, I suggest you write them down on a piece of paper and make sure that we do call them up during the questioning period. Any questions from members before we begin? Great. Seeing none, only bill on the agenda is Senate File 7. Oh, I'm sorry, one additional comment. This is being laid over. This is not going to be voted upon today. We are going to hear all of the Community Solar Garden bills first and then perhaps take action on Tuesday or in a future meeting. So this is going to be laid over on the table. So with that, we will begin. Senator Goggin, Senate File 733. 713.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. I'm Senator Mike Goggin, and Senate File 713, just a quick synopsis of it is existing power purchase agreements, existing community solar gardens, and ones that are in process of being built are not affected by this bill. It's all future community solar gardens. And the reason I'm bringing this bill forward is just to the enormous cost that community solar gardens cost to Xcel Energy ratepayers. And it's a pass-through cost. Xcel doesn't make any money on it or anything. It goes right through to the rates. And, unfortunately, in 2013, we didn't have the vision to look forward and see how quickly solar would come down in cost. And so when you look at what's available out there for purchase versus this program, it makes sense to look at other ways to keep these community solar gardens, but also find a way to reduce the rates that the Xcel Energy ratepayers pay. And this whole community solar garden only applies to Xcel Energy ratepayers. There's no other utility or co-op or municipality that's required to do this. And in this day and age, we're looking at any way we can to reduce the cost of our electricity to our customers, to our ratepayers, to the businesses. We had testimony the other day from some pretty heavy industrial users, and we see the cost of electricity going up dramatically in this state. And this is a similar issue to what happened with the biomass with Benson and the Laurentian areas, that it's just become too costly to continue to do this. And we need to look at other ways that we can make get this solar at a much lower cost to the Xcel ratepayers. So with that, I'm just going to leave it at that and have testifiers come up.
Okay. Members, we'll hold off any questions for Senator Goggin also, unless there's something very hot on the tops of your minds right now. We can do that during our questioning period. Seeing none, we will start with the two proponents of the bill, Rick Evans, or at least not against the bill, I should say. Rick Evans from Xcel Energy and Isaac Orr of the Center for the American Experiment. Please come in, come up to the table, and we will start with Mr. Evans. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk today about our community solar gardens program. As Senator Goggin said, this is a program that was created in 2013. It applies only to Xcel Energy customers. Xcel Energy runs community solar garden programs in Wisconsin and Colorado, and there are other community solar programs offered in the state of Minnesota by other utilities, but only Xcel Energy offers the program under this in this form and in this process. And I think, I hope before I'm done, you'll understand why we think this is a wrong process, this is the wrong way to run community solar gardens, and we would look forward to working with the committee, Senator Goggin and others, to see if we can't create a better community solar garden program for Xcel Energy customers. The first thing you need to understand and remember, for those of you that were around in 2013, was what was the purpose of community solar gardens. Back in 2013, we were expanding the subsidy programs for rooftop solar in Xcel Energy service territory so that more of our customers could pursue their desire to put solar panels on their roof and offset their energy load. The problem was, and everybody recognized it, that not every customer in Xcel Energy service territory has a roof that they can put solar panels on. People who are renters can't put solar panels on their roof. If their rooftop was not structurally sound enough to put them up there, they couldn't do that. If they were in an area where they were shaded by trees, it was pointless to do it. If their roof pointed in the wrong direction, it was pointless to do it. And so those kind of customers, of which there are many in our service territory, were left out of the rooftop solar programs that were being offered in 2013. And so the Community Solar Garden Program was an attempt to remedy that by offering residential customers who couldn't use their rooftops a way to get in on the solar on solar energy. And so the idea, as it was discussed back in 2013, was that groups of customers, communities of customers, could get together and build the solar panels off in a location other than their rooftop, and then own a share, be a subscriber, or own a share in those solar panels, and use that energy to offset their energy charges. The idea was that churches or neighborhoods or other community organizations would get together and put together community solar gardens that could then be shared by their members who, for whatever reason, could not use the rooftop. As we considered that, which was really kind of an experimental program in Minnesota, we had never done anything like this before, one of the questions came up is, well, how much should the credit be? What's the credit that should be given to customers who become subscribers in the community solar gardens? And we launched ourselves on another experiment, which is called the value of solar. And you'll see the value of solar referenced in the statute. And the value of solar was the method by which we were to establish the price of this energy. So Xcel Energy customers have to pay for community solar garden energy that comes on the system. We are required to bring it on the system. We can't say no. And we have to pay a certain rate. And the rate is set by the so-called value of solar. So I apologize for taking you down a little bit of a wonky trail, but you need to understand what the value of solar is before you can understand how this price got set. So I think in your packets you have a bar chart like this that breaks down the value of solar. The value of solar is recalculated every year by the Public Utilities Commission. And so what this bar chart shows is the elements of the value of solar that are built into our 2019 value of solar rate, which again is the rate that our customers will pay for the community solar energy. The value of solar is based on an assumption, which I think I will be able to show you is actually an erroneous assumption, but it's based on the assumption that community solar garden energy will displace natural gas energy. And so if you look at the elements that make up the value of solar in that bar chart, there's one at the bottom, the blue one, that's $55. That's the avoided cost of building a gas plant. So if we, the assumption being if you build community solar gardens, you'll avoid having to build a gas plant. Excuse me. The second bar is the orange bar that's $18.30. per megawatt hour, and the $18.30 is avoided transmission costs. Community solar gardens are actually connected directly to the distribution grid, and so theoretically, as more and more of that energy is connected to the distribution grid, Xcel Energy will be able to avoid building additional transmission to deliver energy to its customers, primarily in the Twin City area. So that's another element of the value that is assumed in the value of solar. And then the third element is the purple one at the top, which is the $37.10. And that assumption is that's the avoided, or rather the environmental benefit or the avoided environmental cost. Again, the assumption is that that community solar energy will be displacing gas energy. And since natural gas generation produces carbon dioxide and produces other pollutants, by going with community solar, you will offset the gas energy. The $15 at the top is not really part of the value of solar. It's just that when the PUC put together the value of solar for 2019, the developers said it's just not enough money. It costs us more than even the value of solar to serve residential customers, and so we need an extra $15. I think originally they'd asked for $25, but they got an extra $15. So the result of all this, if you add up that column, is that the value of solar is about $110 a megawatt hour, and the value of solar plus the residential adder is about $125 a megawatt hour. Now, that wasn't altogether unusual back in 2013, because back in 2013, buying conventional solar, utility-scale solar, would cost us about $120 a megawatt hour. So it was actually, you know, kind of comparable. But then something happened. There's something happened that made this value of solar calculation be the wrong way to calculate the price. And that was something that Senator Goggin alluded to. The cost of solar energy on our system in even just the last 6 years has dropped by two-thirds. Instead of being $120 a megawatt hour, the utility solar or conventional solar, whatever you want to call it, now costs about $40 a kilowatt hour, a megawatt hour. And what that means then is that within just 6 years, the utility, Xcel Energy, is starting to put solar on its system because it's a cost-effective option for our customers. Our last resource plan had hundreds of megawatts of solar proposed, and our next resource plan that we're going to file in July will have possibly thousands of megawatts of solar energy proposed. And what the PUC has told us is, well, if you put that much solar in your resource plan and you have to take the community solar garden solar because the law says you do, take that first and put that in the solar component of your resource plan. And then if you still have room, go get the community solar energy, or rather the utility scale energy at $40. Well, you can see what's happened. Because the cost of solar energy has come down so rapidly, we are not displacing natural gas with community solar gardens. We're displacing cheaper solar with community solar gardens. So our customers are not getting the benefit of $37 in environmental benefits because we're replacing one solar generation source with another solar generation source. There's no environmental difference. Arguably still getting the benefit of the transmission, avoided cost of transmission, but we're not getting the benefit of avoiding a gas plant at $55. We're getting the benefit of avoiding cheaper solar at $40. The result of this is that now we have community solar garden energy still coming on our system at $110 to $125 a megawatt hour when we could acquire the exact same solar energy for $40 a megawatt hour. And this is where the program, we believe, for our customers has turned into a very bad deal. It wasn't anybody's fault. It wasn't anybody's intention. It wasn't what the program was set up to do. But back in 2013, no one expected that the cost of solar was going to fall so dramatically that we'd be actually putting it on our system because it's a cost-effective resource for us. And that has completely upset this. As you can see by the bar chart, the value of solar, or rather the price that we pay for community solar, bears no relationship to the cost of the energy. It's determined exclusively by the false notion that we're displacing gas energy with the solar energy, but we're not. We're displacing cheaper solar energy with more expensive solar energy. Now, ordinarily, when utilities in Minnesota acquire energy resources, there's two ways that we do it. Tried and true, very traditional. One is if we're going to acquire energy from an independent power producer, we put it out for bids. And we have a competitive process where proposers, developers come in and say, I will build you this much energy and this is what I'll charge you for it. And so the bidding process helps drive the cost down. It forces competitors to keep their costs low so that they can compete with the other people who would provide us with the same energy. The other way that we traditionally do it is like a utility rate case. That is, the utility comes in and says in very great detail, here's our costs. This is what we think it will cost us to provide this energy. These are the various options that we have, and this is how we intend to provide that energy. And only when those costs are proven and determined and made, and the insurance that they're prudent, that we're not overspending, that we're not buying stuff we don't need and all of that, then the rate is fixed for the electric energy. As you can see from the bar chart and from the description of the program, Community Solar Garden doesn't use either one of those things. There's no bidding. We have to take their energy. They have a guaranteed buyer. We have to pay the cost that's based on the, we think, false value of solar calculation. There is no demonstration. There's no oversight of what their costs are or whether, you know, their costs bear any relationship. And so the result is what we've seen in the marketplace, which is while the cost of utility-scale solar has dropped by two-thirds, the cost of community solar gardens hasn't dropped at all. But, of course, how could it? It's not based on cost. It's based on the value of solar calculation. The other point that's worth making is that just because of the economics of the way the program works, it doesn't actually fulfill the goal that it had when we started. Recall that the goal was to help residential customers who had bad rooftops participate in solar. But in fact, what's happened is that 88.9% of the benefit goes to our commercial customers, our largest customers. They're the ones who are signing up. So we collect the $110 to $125 from all of our customers, and we pay it to the community solar garden developers for developing the project and to the subscribers who are supposed to share in the bounty. And as it happens, those are not residential customers with bad rooftops. It's commercial customers. 88.9% of the money goes to commercial customers, not to the residential customers that the program was intended to benefit. So let me just wrap up by saying we do run successful community solar projects in our other jurisdictions. Other utilities in Minnesota run successful community solar projects. It's possible to have a community solar garden program, but we should not be paying this high price for the energy, and we should be serving the customers that the program was intended to serve and not our largest commercial customers. With that, I'll conclude, and I'd be happy to stand for questions when that time comes.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. We will go on to the next testifier. Don't go away. I'm sure there will be questions after we get done with the people who are here against the bill, but you can be excused for now. Mr. Isaac Orr is here from the Center of the American Experiment. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
All right. My name is Isaac Orr, and I'm a policy fellow at Center of the American Experiment. Thank you for having me today. So the title of my talk is Throwing Shade at Community Solar, and just kind of talking about solar generally in Minnesota first. So this is a recent picture. I think this was from a few days ago. A friend of ours sent this in. Just said, well, I wonder how much electricity these are generating right now. So just kind of talking about some of the challenges that solar presents in Minnesota are the panels are expensive, the solar power is not abundant, low capacity factors for solar. I mean, it only shows up to work about 18.2% of the time. Solar power is not reliable, and these factors lead to high per kilowatt hour costs. So problems with community solar is it's a higher cost than utility scale solar because the installations are smaller, therefore you can't take advantage of economies of scale. The community solar, the Star Tribune reported at 135, and you know, 125 reflects the lower cost of solar that we were talking about, the value of solar. So this is about 4.3 times more expensive than existing coal-fired electricity generation. It's about two times more expensive than utility scale, and these costs are passed on to other customers like me. I'm an Xcel Energy customer. So the cost of solar panels has come down a lot since 2010, 80%. But my answer to that is, so what? If you eat 30,000 calories a day and you cut your intake by 80%, you're still eating more calories than you probably should. And that's reflected by installation cost data from the Energy Information Administration from 2016. You see that solar is much more expensive on a per kilowatt basis than natural gas or wind. And these are probably a little high because they're from 2016. The assumptions from the 2019 annual energy outlook has that at about 1,900. So it's come down pretty substantially, but we're reaching the point of diminishing returns. All right, so abundant solar, these are capacity factors. So this basically measures how much electricity was generated out of the theoretical potential for each generation source in Minnesota. This is from the Energy Information Administration. So we see down on the list, solar is coming in at 18.2%. So that's not very good because we can't control when that happens. Unlike nuclear, hydroelectric, coal, or natural gas, we determine how much it generates, not the elements. So unreliable energy, as Rick said, does not reduce our need for fossil fuels. We don't know how much solar output is going to vary from day to day, week to week, month to month. So therefore, we still need the fossil fuels to be available when the sun isn't shining, and this is very expensive. Think about it in these terms. Your car isn't free because you rode your bike to work that day. You still have your car payment, the insurance, the licensing costs, the interest payments. And that's kind of what it's like when we add solar onto the grid. It's an additional cost. It is not really replacing anything. And we can see that in California. This is from this morning. Electricity generation from solar, and it was 8 o'clock there. So, you know, it's up to 20% of installed capacity utilization right now, which still isn't very good. But California is using lots of natural gas, and they're importing a lot of their electricity from Nevada and Arizona, which are generating that electricity from natural gas, coal, and nuclear power. So expensive panels plus low electricity generation equals expensive electricity. The Star Tribune states that community solar initiatives are cost about $85 million last year, and they will cost $117 million in 2019, which is about a $40 increase for the bills for Xcel Energy customers. And community solar is a bad value for Minnesota. We have 505 megawatts of capacity, so if it's generating at a normal capacity factor, it's going to produce about 805 megawatt hours of electricity. This is about 1.3% of the generation. But community solar makes up 3.3% of the bills, so it shows that it's a net loser for Minnesota families. So this won't save money because, there will be avoided costs. We won't spend that money on coal or natural gas, but this is very much overstated, and it's far less than the additional money we're spending for the additional solar. So the fuel cost per kilowatt hour, you look at the heat rates of the delivered costs and all that kind of stuff, it's about $2.10 per kilowatt for coal. So we're essentially saving 13.5 or 12.5 cents per kilowatt hour to save 2 cents, which, in my opinion, makes no sense. So we often talk about the Lazard's levelized cost of electricity, and people say, well, look, this is cost competitive with nuclear, coal, natural gas, but these assumptions are not reflective of real-world conditions in Minnesota. So the capacity factors that they use for Lazard are, they say, well, the wind is going to generate about 38 to 55% of its capacity factor in Minnesota, 35.9, and 21 to 23% for solar, 18.2. Interestingly, no state in the country has an annualized capacity factor for solar at 32%. California has the best at 28.9. Newer panels are going to be more efficient. Older panels are less efficient. So some of this is a legacy deal. But they don't account for transmission costs in the Lazard study, and they also don't account for the cost of providing electricity when the wind is not blowing or the sun is not shining. So we look at the levelized cost of electricity, and we did this based on Minnesota capacity factors. This is data from the Center of the American Experiment's forthcoming study on the impact of a 50% renewable energy standard. So you see that community solar dwarfs the cost of other sources of electricity. So people often talk about jobs, that solar is going to be a great jobs creation engine, but most of these are temporary construction jobs that go away after the installations have been built. And this is from the Solar Foundation. So most of these jobs are in installation. Some of them are in manufacturing, sales, distribution, but very few of them are permanent. And we see that here in Minnesota as well. Solar and wind accounted for about 6,000 jobs together, 4,000 for solar, 2,000 for wind in Minnesota. But, you know, you have 5,151 of those jobs are construction jobs. So because there were no coal, nuclear, and natural gas plants in our construction, and the Department of Commerce says we installed 467 megawatts of solar in 2017, it's a pretty safe bet that most of those jobs were, those construction jobs were solar jobs. So about 82% of the jobs in the wind and solar industry are temporary. So that's why we should repeal the community solar. It's a bad value for ratepayers, and if nothing else, we should make it a line item on people's bill so they understand the true cost of this program. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Orr. One question I would have, could we get copies for the committee? I don't believe we have copies inside of our
Absolutely.
Packets for this. So thank you. You can contact Darren. He'll take care of it. We still have 9 minutes remaining in the for the individuals who are in favor of this bill. Are there any other people in the crowd that would like to come up and testify in favor of Senate File 713? Seeing none, we will now proceed to others who are against, happen to be against the bill. We'll start with Joe Sullivan, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, and David Schaefer from Mencia.
Mr. Chair, do you have a sign-in sheet for the desk here, please?
Oh, we will have the, here we go. We'll get one for you. So we'll start with Mr. Sullivan. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Senator Osmek, members of the committee, my name is Joe Sullivan. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Commerce with the Division of Energy Resources. Thank you for having us here today to speak about Senate File 713. The department is opposed to Senate File 713. We're concerned about a wholesale repeal of the Solar Community Gardens Program. We're also concerned that the legislation is not clear on whether or not an application for a community solar garden would continue or be accepted if that was submitted before July 1st of 2019. But a little bit about why we're opposed to the legislation. First of all, community solar garden development has been a key part of Minnesota's solar jobs and economic development. A couple quick things for reference, 98% of Minnesota's solar capacity has been installed since 2013. Much of that growth has been driven by the rapid decrease in module costs, a 99% decrease since 1977, and that has resulted in a significant reduction in overall installation costs. Of the approximately 285 megawatts of solar installed last year in Minnesota, 259 megawatts were developed through community solar gardens. And at the end of 2018, Minnesota has 882 megawatts of solar capacity installed and electrified. More than half of that capacity, about 508 megawatts, is from the Solar Community Garden Program. 80% of solar capacity additions in the next 3 years will come from community solar gardens. Also, I think it is worth mentioning that although solar, while growing, and you've all heard the story about solar growth, it still just does make up about 2% of Minnesota's energy mix. And so lastly, you know, I would just say that, the success of the program has been in ramping up solar in Minnesota, and we're excited to see that and support that. So Commerce is committed to working with legislators to address concerns that can strengthen rather than eliminate the program. Legislation and ultimately further development of community solar gardens, we'd like to work on making the program better. Solar community garden development has been instrumental in developing the solar market, reducing costs for all solar installations, and creating jobs in the clean energy sector. One thing that is important is that solar community gardens are often marketed as a way to increase access to solar, yet the solar community garden program outside of Xcel are primarily premium programs, meaning that participants pay higher costs. And lower-income households outside of Xcel, it is for lower-income households, this can be a significant barrier to access to solar technology. Large-scale solar, like wind development, is helping farmers in rural communities provide an additional crop and an income stream for their farm. Solar property tax revenue benefits also develop a number of counties and communities. And lastly, as I said, the solar community garden development has been instrumental in developing our solar market, reducing our costs for all solar installations, and creating jobs in the clean energy sector. So with that, we would like to work with the committee and the House as well to build upon these successes, address the concerns that there are with the solar community garden, and continue developing and building on the nation's strongest program. Thank you. And with that, I can answer any questions when the time is right.
We'll move on to David Schaefer. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is David Schaefer. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association, or MNSEIA. We represent about 115 different solar companies throughout the state. This includes solar installers, developers, companies like the letter that I handed out before that even do prairie restoration. We work on behalf of solar to move it forward in the state. I'm here today, and I'm actually really quite happy with an opportunity to talk about this bill and these topics, because I think that there's a number of misnomers out there about this program that I'd really like an opportunity to clarify. The first is cost. So while it is true that this program did have some fairly high costs right at the start, this is really a tale of two programs, in my opinion. There's the initial genesis, which is the applicable retail rate. You could get rates as high as 15 cents, or I guess $150 a megawatt hour we're talking about. That was for a lot of residential participation in the program. Applicable retail rate was really a complicated nine-tiered rate structure. But starting in 2017, we actually transitioned to something called the Value of Solar, which Excel has alluded to. What the Value of Solar is an attempt to do is provide fair market value for the services provided by solar, but not utility-scale solar, distributed solar. When you actually looked at their calculations, you see that it's a breakdown for the benefits associated with distributed solar. So a good example of that would be reduced line losses. Or if you have a whole bunch of different systems, if there's an outage at one, you can still power the rest of the grid using that. Whereas if you just have a single baseload item that goes down, you could lose a substantial amount of power. So there's additional benefits associated with distributed solar. So that's the idea of what this is trying to encapsulate. So it's not really a fair comparison to talk about the avoided costs associated with a potential utility-scale solar garden versus the distributed solar, because they're trying to equate different things. It's a cost versus a stack of benefits. The other thing that Excel brought up on this item was that we're now avoiding utility-scale solar as opposed to natural gas. Well, this body may remember that a couple years ago it did approve a natural gas plant for Excel. We're not opposed to the natural gas plant in any way, shape, or form, but it is still technically, for the purposes of avoided cost calculations, an avoidable cost. So while their argument does have merit post the building of that natural gas facility, it is still technically avoidable, and thus it should not scale down the value of solar costs today. So what the value of solar is, fair market value, for the benefits provided to Excel and the ratepayers. The other misnomer I've been hearing a lot about is residential participation in this program. The idea of this program, correct, was to encourage people to put solar who couldn't put it on the roofs, put it out in the field, and they could participate the same way as if someone who could put it on the roof could. In Minnesota, we have 4,600 people that net meter. This includes commercial because it's kind of hard to break that out from farms. So there's 4,600 people that net meter. This program already services 11,600 residential participants. So this program's really been live for 3 years. It has already more than doubled the amount of participation. And frankly, it's at a cheaper cost than a lot of these installations because there's no additional incentives outside of retail rate. So this program, in terms of actually having people participate in solar, is being more successful than our 40-year-old net metering program. The conversation has been around program capacity. So one thing I'd like to say about that is that when you want to set up one of these gardens, you often need to have anchor tenants that buy up several subscriptions. That's the way to make them pencil. 90-10, perhaps we should be shooting to something that's lower. I'm okay with having that conversation. But this disparity is a natural part of how you make these projects pencil. The last thing I want to talk about is the impact that this program has had on this state. So as the gentleman pointed out on the PDF or the PowerPoint before, there's 4,600 jobs in solar right now. A lot of that has to do with the fact that this program exists and has been building megawatts and megawatts of solar. We have about 515 megawatts of solar under this program. My members tell me it's about $2 million per megawatt. So this is already a billion-dollar program. There's about 300 megawatts in the queue. So this particular bill here today is jeopardizing $600 million of possible development into the state. I hope the committee does not take that lightly, because that is a very big number, and there's a lot of potential job losses associated with it. The jobs, too, solar installer in Minnesota, that's the number one fastest-growing job in the state, in the nation, and these are not bad-paying jobs. There's currently a 2-to-1 ratio in the state for electricians, so there are many solar installers in this state making $60,000 or more. So this has been a great job creator for the installers, the people below, like Prairie Restorations on that email, and it's really just been a great program for the whole state, so I really hope this committee considers very hard about program modifications and the elimination of the program. But having said that, we do understand that there have been some concerns with the program, and we're happy to work with the parties that might like to see change to make this a better program and more successful for the state. So thank you for your time, and if anyone has questions later, I'm happy to come back.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. Next on the list is Lynn Hinkle and Ross Abbey. Mr. Hinkle, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon.
We are at about 20 minutes remaining.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Osmick and members of the Senate Energy Committee. My name is Lynn Hinkle, and I'm representing IPF Solar. I'm here to express our strong opposition to Senate File 713. IPF Solar has about 70 megawatts of community solar gardens, I'm going to continue to call them CSGs, in operation, construction, or development. Our concern is not just the negative impact on our Minnesota-based company, but the negative economic development impact on Minnesota. CSGs are economic development engines, and it is hard to understand any policy that would end those benefits to our state. Let's look at the numbers. Now, I'm going to look at the numbers that we've generated out of IPS Solar, and I'll talk about how to scale that up as I go forward. The economic impact of IPS Solar's CSGs, with the understanding that our solar gardens represent about 15% of the roughly 500 CSGs operating in Minnesota. And it's worth noting that almost all of our community solar gardens are in churches, in schools, and public entities. In terms of jobs, we created 800 local jobs during the 9-month construction period, half direct, half indirect. These include installer jobs listed at $70,000 a year, but that does not include the new local business spending that these paychecks represent for local communities. Local infrastructure investments in roads, utility upgrades, etc., have topped, from our company alone, $150 million. Payments for local services, such as landowner payments, engineering, and consulting, exceed $500 million. And $22 million is paid in local tax revenue and wages for the permanent jobs that are created. These are not all construction jobs. There are permanent jobs that are created that add to the wealth of communities where the community solar gardens are located. Remember, the scale for all Minnesota CSGs is 7 times the numbers that I've cited. In aggregate, they contribute about $1.5 billion to the Minnesota economy. CSG jobs and other solar jobs have quickly grown to almost 20% of the entire med tech cluster, just as a comparison, in Minnesota, and it's the fastest growing job title in Minnesota and in the U.S. It's hard to believe we even have to have this discussion. But it's important for members to understand the dramatic negative impact this bill will have on the Minnesota economy. IPS Solar will continue its well-known efforts to engage in all stakeholder processes to develop and improve the Minnesota CSG program. But repealing CSGs is a stark move to end those productive processes. With that, I conclude my remarks, and at the appropriate time, prepared to answer. In fact, would I'd say entertain questions from members. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hinkle. Next is Ross Abbey. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Chair Osmond, committee members, thank you. I'm Ross Abbey with the United States Solar Company, Solar Corporation, otherwise known as U.S. Solar. Chair, I did bring some exhibits to hand out. Can I walk those forward?
A page will come over and take them and hand them out for the committee. Thank you.
Thanks so much. I brought 25 hard copies, and it's just a single-sided document. U.S. Solar is a Minnesota-based company founded in 2014 specifically to serve Minnesota's new well-defined competitive market for community solar. We focus on developing high-quality projects, establishing strong relationships with our landowners in the community, and driving benefits to that local community as well as all Accelerate payers. I mentioned that it's a competitive market. That's a really important element. Minnesota's model has now been adopted by a number of other states following in Minnesota's footsteps. Developers such as IPS and U.S. Solar, we compete against each other to get those subscribers, to get those landowners, to convince a local jurisdiction to give us a land use permit, and it's not easy. And landowners love this stuff. 1 megawatt, which is the current scale, is about 8 to 10 acres. So for a farmer with a 40-acre or an 80-acre site, it works great for them. They tell us to put it in the back corner. They kind of put it where the acres where they're getting the least development. They don't have to manage the site, but it does generate revenue for them. As others have mentioned, over the course of a 25-year lease, could be as much as $250,000 or more going into that local farm family. And that's a fixed 25-year contract, typically with escalators. That's a benefit. We also plant these facilities with pollinator-friendly grass and wildflowers. So there's a conservation benefit. There's a water benefit, air quality benefit. There's a soil benefit. After 25 years, we can pull these stakes out of the site. It becomes black gold in terms of very productive farmland. Those benefits I just mentioned aren't in the value of solar. The value of solar only speaks to the direct benefits to the ratepayers. And if I may, I'd like to talk about costs, because I understand costs are a concern. There's been a lot of costs about why aren't costs coming down. Well, if you look at the figure I just handed out, figure one, costs are coming down under the current program with no changes. Between 2015 and 2016, the cost went down. The cost of ratepayers, the rate paid to subscribers for these gardens, went down by 1.5%. Now, that same year, we went from a 5-megawatt scale down to a 1-megawatt scale. So even though you don't see it in this chart, we actually, the cost economics of these projects were degraded by that move because now we lose that cost economies of scale. Actually, when we went from 5 megawatts down to 1 megawatts, the majority of players in the market got up and left because they weren't from Minnesota to begin with. It's a lot of work to put these 1-megawatt gardens together and spread them around, but that's what U.S. Solar and the remaining players are committed to doing. 2017 went down 12%. 2018 went down another 5.5%. 2019, it hasn't been finalized yet at the commission, but we expect it'll go down to another 7.8%. That's a 24% decline over the last 4 or 5 years. For commercial customers, for residential customers, it's actually a larger decline. And Xcel has told the PUC already, the commission, that they expect the value of solar could decline another 15 to 20% in the next few years due to installed project capacity values coming in above Xcel's expectations. Xcel also gets a purchase discount of 64% on energy from these gardens if that portion of the garden is unsubscribed. 64% discount. I don't know if they mentioned that. And the federal ITC, let's not forget, at the federal level, the ITC for solar is stepping down 13% in 2020, 15% in 2021, 55% in 2022. These existing cost declines, price declines, put a ton of pressure on CSG developers, those of us still in the market, forcing us to get more lean, more cost efficient. And we're having discussions with the chair, we're having discussions with Xcel about how can we tweak the program to allow us to bring down those development costs even further. For example, by removing the contiguous county lines, we can lower our cost of customer acquisition while also increasing accessibility to subscribers, including residential subscribers. Now, I know Mr. Evans gave some testimony about what was the original intent of this program. He characterized it as helping people, homeowners that have a tree near their roof. Without going back into the history, I would disagree. I would contest that characterization of the intent of the program. And all you have to do is look at the existing statute. The existing statute allows subscribers to be allocated up to 400 kilowatts per garden, times however many gardens. So 400 kilowatts to a given customer, that was never merely limited to a homeowner. Although I think we can do better at serving more resi. Currently, I think the number is 12,000 residential customers served by the program. I'd like to see that double or triple going forward. Finally, all the talk about cost, I would also want to talk about benefits, because that's the reason we're actually doing it, right? So the second figure, you see a breakdown of the three main value components, and this is average cost across the 6 years the value of solar has been calculated. These are numbers that have been approved by the commission, approved by the Department of Commerce as well. Actually, these are Excel's own numbers. These are the numbers Excel is telling to the commission. And what you see here is that for every kilowatt hour or megawatt hour purchased from community solar gardens, the blue, that's avoided rate costs. So about 4 cents of every kilowatt hour comes off the retail rate for Excel's retail rate. That means CSG's, this program, has reduced the company's retail rates by roughly $27 million through the end of last year. We displaced the burning of fossil fuels, specifically natural gas and coal, and we saved roughly $17 million through the end of 2018 by burning less of those fossil fuels. Excel also gets the renewable energy credits, the RECs, that come from these gardens. That helps them meet their existing state goals. If they exceed the state goals, they can turn around and sell those RECs, monetize those RECs, make money on their side. We've also paid, this isn't shown in the calculations, it's not, we don't get credit for it, but private developers have paid over $8 million to Excel to study their own system, engineering studies, $8 million for the study so they can better understand their system, how to upgrade it. We've paid in $120 million upfront to upgrade Excel's system, their distribution wires, going from a single phase to a three phase, that benefits all users along the line, also upgrading their substation. Again, that we don't even get credit for that in the Valley of Solar. These projects also pay commercial rates, so we're benefiting the local county, the local tax revenue for the township as well. And then there's all the private benefits, the landowners, the subscribers, all the workers, all the people that are actually out there doing the work to make this happen. So with that, I'd wrap up my comments, but happy to answer questions as well. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Abbey. Last two testifiers will be Alan Gleckner, Fresh Energy, and Will Georgia. Mr. Gleckner, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Alan Gleckner. I'm the Director of Energy Markets with Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a Minnesota-based nonprofit that has been leading and shaping state energy policy conversations for more than 25 years. We appreciate the opportunity to share some thoughts regarding Senate File 713. As you've heard so far today, Minnesota's community solar law was adopted in 2013, and Fresh Energy was among the most involved stakeholders in developing the program. In the 5+ years since, we've learned a great deal, worked through a number of critical technical and implementation issues at the PUC, including changes that have made the program smaller generally and reduced costs. Meanwhile, Minnesota's solar industry has continued to grow and deliver increasing amounts of clean, reliable energy. While it has had growing pains and been an evolving process, Excel's community solar program is responsible for significant solar development, which has helped to spur new jobs and local economic development in communities throughout the state. We believe community solar has a role in continuing to provide Minnesotans with access to clean energy and in continuing to build on the job creation and economic development successes achieved to date. We are optimistic that Senator Goggins' legislation will encourage the important conversation about the future of community solar and its role within Minnesota's future energy mix. Fresh Energy is committed to working collaboratively with stakeholders to identify and implement improvements to Excel's community solar program, and we appreciate the opportunity to provide input today.
Thank you. Will Georgia, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes. Will Georgia, Novel Energy Solutions. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Normally at this time, I'm listening in on phone calls with the SRC work group between Xcel Energy and other solar developers to work out, you know, our program. But I thought that it was important to speak with you today, so thank you for having me here. A couple of things I had heard that I want to just set the record straight on first is I had heard that Xcel pays both developers and subscribers for putting solar on the grid. Xcel does not pay us for putting solar on the grid with these community solar applications. We, in fact, pay Xcel. We pay to apply. We pay to study. We also pay an interconnection fee amount that Xcel creates. And if we want to proceed with the project, we have to pay that amount, no question. So we do not get paid by Xcel. Novel Energy Solutions is a local Minnesota company. We were founded in 2012 by a fifth-generation farmer from St. Charles, Minnesota. Family's been in Minnesota for over 130 years. We started out as three employees in 2012. Today, we're 40 employees, and we do a lot of community solar development, especially in rural areas, working with landowners. 90% of our customers are rural farmers and landowners, and the CSG program, the community solar program, has benefited those landowners by giving their fields a 25-year rest from crops to be able to grow another crop, which is solar. That's provided them with a good income, a steady income. This helps farmers who are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, who are typically out there working the fields. Now with solar, they can sit back and rest and enjoy just leasing their land to us, who'll develop and make them those payments that are typically 2 to 3 to 4 times what they would normally get from doing their crops. So it's a huge benefit to them. It helps them put together a nest egg for their own families and something to leave their children after they're gone. Community solar has also benefited rural communities who are subscribing to these solar gardens. Over our years developing these, we've worked on development for over 100 megawatts, and we're saving customers tens of millions of dollars over the life of this program. If this bill becomes law, we won't be able to develop additional gardens for those communities, and they'll lose out on those economic opportunities. And the other thing I want to talk about is that, as Mr. Abbey said and others who are speaking out against this bill, it has created thousands of local jobs here in Minnesota. I saw that graph about construction jobs being temporary. I would talk to, you know, my subcontractors who are working with us to build these projects who exist for the sole purpose of building solar projects. I would talk to our engineers who are asking me how many community solar gardens we want to develop next year because they want to go higher for their team because they can't keep up with the pace of solar projects that we want to develop. So there's jobs in the actual construction. There's also many jobs in the supply chain as well. So there's a huge benefit to that being in Minnesota. And I'll tell you, Minnesota is the largest community solar state in the United States. And I think that's something that we should be very proud of. Today, our company is 40 people. We're based out of West St. Paul as well as St. Charles. Over the next 18 months, we're going to be looking to hire an additional 20 to 40 people. Those are permanent jobs, full-time jobs. And, you know, if this program were to go away, that would make it much, much more difficult to be able to hire those additional people because those are people that are working on the land side with farmers, project managers, engineers, finance, just a number of different jobs in this industry. So, you know, I'd strongly urge you to support to oppose this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Georgia. We do have a little bit more time, about 2.5 minutes. Is there anyone else in the crowd that would like to speak against this bill? Seeing none, we will begin with questions from the committee. Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're a newbie. You've got to turn the microphone on in this body.
My first couple questions are for Mr. Schaefer.
Mr. Schaefer, will you come up? And members, if you do have questions for, it'd be great for us to just go for Mr. Schaefer once, and then we'll go to the next senator, and we'll bring up who else you might want to, just so we can expedite this. Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Schaefer, in your statements, you mentioned something about Xcel doing a natural gas plant. And what is that natural gas plant being put in place for?
Mr. Schaefer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rarick, first of all, nice to see you over here. Second of all, I believe that's the Sherco plant.
Correct. Senator Rarick.
Thank you. And so the point is that it's going in place to replace a coal plant that is existing. Do you believe community solar gardens have the ability to replace that load?
Mr. Schaefer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rarick, not in whole. I think that'd be a lot of community solar to do that, but I do believe it is potentially like, let's say Xcel had a delay in their ability to build out and they need an extra month or two. Community solar maybe could fill in some of that gap and thus makes it partially avoidable. The same way if you can put off your car payment a couple of months, it's quite helpful to your pocketbook.
Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just think that your point there is completely invalid when you're talking about the rates. That gas plant is going in to replace a coal load and it'll be fewer emissions will be being produced by that. And you don't have, you talked about it like we should be counting that cost towards what community solar gardens are saving us. That has nothing to do with community solar gardens. It's replacing a coal load. You also made a comment about you go after some of the large businesses because it makes your model affordable. Is that correct?
Mr. Schaefer?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rarick, it makes it work out, yes, it's correct.
Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you're worried about the affordability for your companies, but you're not worried about the affordability for Xcel customers and the ratepayers. I guess I find that a little disingenuous.
Mr. Schaefer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rarick, no, I'm quite concerned about the price for ratepayers. What? So the it used to be the applicable retail rate, which was effectively a retail-based rate like net metering. The value of solar is significantly cheaper now. I don't know that. Do you mind if I borrow this for a second?
Where it is.
I don't know that I think this is exactly correct, but it's definitely lower at this point in time. My number is it's $100 a megawatt hour as opposed to $125. But the point is that's still cheaper than $150, which is what it used to be. So already the price of this program is decreasing significantly. Over 5 years, it's dropped $50 a megawatt hour by my estimate. And I guess the point I wanted to emphasize is while it may be more expensive on paper if you look at it a certain way, the energy and the capacity that that Xcel gets is more valuable than like a utility scale project somewhere else because it's closer to load and there's more resiliency benefits and there's other good aspects about distributed generation that make it a better value than the straight upfront price. It's not fair to compare them.
Senator Rarick.
Thank you. One more. When we talk about the jobs, I think we've all seen the benefit to solar, and we're seeing the price of solar coming down. Would not the folks that are doing the community solar have jobs in the installing solar through the other programs anyway, if we just saw the expansion of that rather than just focusing so much on these community solar gardens?
Mr. Schaefer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rarick, that's a good question and one I'd be happy to talk about with you offline, like the differences. But so, for instance, a utility scale project might be 200 megawatts, let's say. That's usually one developer, one EPC. They maybe hire a couple extra contractors. It's not as diversified of an economic sector as having a program like this where you can have 10, 20 different developers participating in the program, hiring their own subcontractors, getting their own engineers. The economic effect of a program like this is significantly greater, despite the fact, the installation jobs on 200 megawatts of utility scale versus 200 megawatts of solar are probably comparable. Does that make sense? Hopefully.
Well, Mr. Schaefer, I have my own question going into that area.
Sure.
Then. Aren't you saying, really proving the case, that community solar gardens compared to utility-grade solar are very much designed less economical because you have so many different hands in the pot? as opposed to a utility grade, which can produce the same amount of energy at a significantly lower cost. I mean, I understand, you know, moving dirt out of one ditch and moving it to the other, but if we can get the dirt a lot cheaper, I think the ratepayers would appreciate that, wouldn't you think?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so this is a great question. You know, when the community solar garden program was established, my understanding was it wasn't designed to be just a power output conversation. There were other variables we were trying to capture and value, like should people have the freedom to put solar on their house? This is sort of an alternative model for that. Should people have the ability to save on their bill credit? Apparently in 2013, we felt that that was in fact the case. Now, I don't think anyone, when they put solar on their house, thinks, you know what, I'm producing a ton of power, I'm going to fix the ecosystem and displace coal gasification plants all throughout time. They're thinking, hey, I'm going to save on my bill. So this is the same type of thing, but out in a field. So to me, the goals are very different. When I think about utility scale, I think this is an alternative to a natural gas facility or a coal plant. This is going to produce power. It's going to produce energy, and it's going to make the grid better in the sense that now the utility has a place to pull utility scale energy and capacity from. So I think that the purpose of these are different, and because of that, there is different pricing associated with it.
Any further questions for Mr. Schaefer? Senator Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. I want to ask a couple more questions on this, and we spoke right before the committee, and it's kind of springboarding to that question, too. And by the way, I want to first point out with Senator Rarick's question on Sherco, if Sherco, the gas plant, has to be delayed representing that district, that is going to be backfilled by the existing second coal unit there. That's not going to be backfilled by solar, but I'm not going to go further down that track. I wanted to ask you on, I need more clarity on when you talked about the value of solar being the benefits of distributed solar, I think was the words that you used. And you're making the point that $100 or $125, and that, if it's either of those, is not my concern. Your claim is the point is it's not $150. And our point here, my point from the committee, is the opposite, saying you're still a long ways away from $40. So if we removed all of the energy produced by the CSGs and immediately filled it in with the same megawatt hours of industry solar, what are exactly the benefits that people would not be receiving from that cheaper solar that's worth the extra $60 to $80 price? That's what I'm trying to get clarity on.
Mr. Schaefer?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Matthews, that's a great question. So the value of solar has a whole bunch of different value stacks in it. But I feel like what they're trying to accomplish is, one, environmental values. So take that or leave that. But the ones I think are really easy to understand are like the line losses. So if you put a gas plant or a coal plant really far away, maybe it's only $50 a megawatt hour, but you need more megawatt hours to get it to the metro area than if you have solar that's closer to load. Line electricity is lost as it passes through the lines. So that's one example. Another example is sort of that resiliency redundancy effect. So if there's Sherco and a tree falls on the power line somehow and knocks that out, a whole bunch of people can lose power because of that. It's a single, there's a reliability concern. If you have a whole bunch of different solar gardens around, you create a more robust electric grid, so it's more easy to deliver some of that power at that time. So there's things like that. And then there's some specifics to the community solar garden program, like someone's participation in the program, their ability to make their own energy. That's not captured in the value of solar, but is a benefit of this program too.
Senator Matthews?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm sure you're not saying this, but the logical question that follows then is, it almost sounds like the argument can be made as you should pay $60 or $80 more for your solar in case a main generation source is ever knocked down somewhere in the future.
Mr. Schaefer?
Mr. Chair, Senator Matthews, I would say not that particular one item. No, it's the total sum of all the additional benefits. So there's other ones too, like solar, it better correlates with the utility's peak demand on their grid. So if everyone turns their lights on at a certain time, having that energy and capacity closer to load helps Xcel shave its peak, so they don't have to go to MISO to buy extra capacity, which saves ratepayers money. So all of these components in the value of solar, it's each one's like a couple cents, or I guess in this, the way we're doing megawatt hours, like a couple dollars, but you stack all those tiny benefits on top of each other, and you get that extra 6 cents, $60, I guess.
One Senator more, Mr. Matthews? Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think I understand where you're coming from. I guess the discussion for this committee is $40 farther away better than $120 in your neighborhood, and I'm not convinced that we still have an overall benefit that justifies that higher cost, which I think is the question that this bill is trying to address. So I hope that the price goes down. I guess my final question would be asking, is there an openness to discuss from the CSG standpoint removing the mandate that Xcel must purchase every ounce of power that's the wrong measuring unit, I know.
Every bit of power that
you're generating onto their system, and rather try to find some way to make your costs more competitive.
Mr. Schaefer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Osmick, I'm glad you asked that question, because what I really want to convey in this whole process is that we are open to working on this program. I mean, we came in seeing some issues on our own end from other types of problems. Xcel clearly has some challenges that they'd like remedied in this process. We're incredibly open to all sorts of different ways to redesign the program, so long as it allows for further development, few, if any, job losses for community solar or in some form to go forward. But I believe that there is a lot of room for us to work collaboratively with other stakeholders to make this program better for all of Minnesota.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if my question is for Mr. Schaefer or Mr. Georgia, but Mr. Georgia, you talked about the revenue that's being generated by landowners due to the projects, and in fact, I have a couple in my district that are going up.
Mr. Schaefer?
Almost.
Oops,
well,
sorry.
Hold on. Sorry, sometimes a little hamster falls asleep on the wheel. What your comments made me think, right, given how much more you're paying for the lease of this land versus what they're able to make on it is cropland, makes me wonder, are the incentives allowing you to overpay for the land and helping to make this more expensive, as we've been kind of talking about throughout the entire hearing? I don't think that's what you were trying to say, but that was what I took away from it, and if you could clarify your comments.
Sure.
Mr.
So
Jordan.
Thank you for your question, Senator Pratt. My comment on that was simply showing what alternatives the landowner has in doing one kind of, finding one kind of business opportunity versus another. I don't know enough about the economics of farming. I myself am not in agriculture, but I don't know enough about the economics of that to compare farm income with solar income and say that, okay, the incentive should be lowered to a point where farm income and solar income should equal. I wouldn't make that comparison, but I just think that the point is that there's another opportunity in the market that's available to landowners, and that's a benefit to them in having another opportunity.
Senator Pratt, just to give you an idea, my wife and her mother's estate has 50 acres of tillable land. She gets approximately $12,000 a year, which she has to pay her property taxes out of that. And I can certainly get my mom's rent, because she rents out 160 acres. But I think at the Legislative Energy Commission, because you really hit on one of my questions, at the Legislative Energy Commission that we held last year, we heard numbers of approximately $1,000 per acre per year leasing, which frankly, if I could get that on my mom's property and my wife's property, I'd be more than happy to talk with you guys. Because it ain't even close. Senator Pratt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think maybe we missed the point of my question a little bit. If the subsidies or the incentives weren't there, would the economics still be there to pay four or five times, as you said, the option? I'm not begrudging my farmers. I'm not or criticizing, Senator Osmick's family for doing this.
You better
right?
not.
Landowners have. I'm smarter than that, Mr. Chair. I'm glad they have options. When crop prices are down, to make some additional income or to diversify the revenue that they have. But again, I'm shocked by the ratio, almost as if it were out of hand when. I think really the idea is to me it seems like the incentives that we put forward in this bill are allowing you to pay greater than market price because you can.
Well, Mr. Georgia,
thank you. And I would say that it's relatively greater to the farming option. We're unable to develop a lot of projects that are more commercialized areas. Because the rent there is probably 10 times what we could offer, and so we're super uncompetitive. The cost, with value of solar now, that credit is set by the PUC annually, and Excel and developers work on, sorting out that credit annually. So that has gone down, and we have had to lower that amount as well. Sometimes it's a matter of, a farmer's got cropland, but the yield's not really great. And so, if their yield was normal or better, it could have been, much closer, more competitive. So I think it kind of depends on the situation. But what we're offering is certainly, it's better than farming, but it's not competitive with a lot of other things. And I'd be happy to speak to anyone on the panel who is interested in leasing their land for solar.
Maybe we should talk afterwards then. Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I sure do not begrudge anyone being able to get what they can for the use of their land. But having served on ag committees, I believe there's an unintended consequence to all this. We are losing our small family farms. We have young farmers who want to do this as a career, they cannot find land, and projects just like this make it unbelievably expensive for them to get into farming. And then one of the other things, we're taking some of our best farmland, doing this to them, and then we complain when farmers are drain tiling and farming in areas they never have before. So is this really environmentally friendly when we're not needing less food production, we need more food production? So when we take our best farmland and take it out of production, we're not helping our environment that way either. So I think we need to take a broad look at all this. Like I said, I don't begrudge anybody getting a higher value for their land, but when we build homes and we build solar arrays on our best farmland, then we're looking into other areas to grow our food.
Thank you, Senator Rarick. To the two testifiers before we go on to additional questions, I'll let you respond. Mr. Schaefer, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Chair. So I just want to say, Senator Rarick, that, this is an issue. This program has been really successful. That is a function of the program's success, I think. And it's something we're happy to have a conversation about. I mean, there's alternative ways to approach this, too. Like, we could figure out ways to open up conservation land and put it and site it in better ways. A conversation like that is something we totally welcome because we acknowledge that there's ways to improve this program.
I think increasing this to allow this in site of conservation easement areas would certainly be something because obviously we can plant pollinators underneath these things that are perfect because we have a bee issue. One thought that I've been going, and I guess I'll sort of throw it out to both of you, when we're talking about putting these pieces of equipment on good tillable land, that I've thrown around a notion on using property values, because the quality of the land is directly against a property value that people pay on their taxes. What would you think about having some level of, and remember, we're having a more community solar garden bills on Tuesday, what would you think of having at least some level of restriction saying that community solar gardens could only be allowed on the lowest quartile, lowest 50% of property values in any given county? Do you think that that would be something that's workable for community solar gardens? Because that would deal with what Senator Rarick passionately said, and I firmly believe too, is that something that is a possibility that would be somewhat workable? Because I want to address his question, but also put these things where it makes sense, where the value of the land isn't so significant. Reaction? Mr. Georgia.
Sure. So this is something that we work with counties and permit authorities on a very local level. I think those areas are very familiar with who's living in their community and what that farmland is like. We've had to deal with that in some areas, and I think, you know, that's probably something that I would say is really effective, and is to just work that out on a local level. And if I may be able to make a point on the Senator Rarick's question, you know, we're founded by farmers who still farm today in St. Charles, and it's something that really matters to us. What we see in the market is most of these farmers that we work with have 40, 50, 80, 200, thousands of acres that they're farming, and for a community solar program that you develop today, we're looking at 5 to maybe 10 acres at the most. And so it's a very small portion of land compared to what the rest of our farmers are working with. And so for them, it's their typical response is, okay, well, that's nice. I can have a little bit of an annuity on a portion of this land that I don't have to worry about, and I can keep farming the remaining portion of my land. And, you know, we work with farmers on the design of these projects to put it, you know, exactly where it works for them, so they can get their combines in, and we're not putting this in the middle of the field. We do a lot to make sure that the farmer can maximize the remaining portion of the land, and we can take up just a small portion of it.
Mr. Schaefer?
Senator Osmek, I think it's an interesting idea. I mean, it sounds like I'll be back here next week, so maybe we'll take it back and I can talk to people about
Well,
it.
Well, and also, thank you, and I appreciate your thoughtfulness on this. I mean, another option is we do have lots of wetland area that farmers own, just because that's the way it's plotted out. Heck, I mean, in my city, we actually plat streets under Lake Minnetonka that we have title to. So I think that's something to think about in getting the price down, because I think what you're hearing from the panel, generally speaking, is we have to do something about these prices. And if you can take a very invaluable piece of property, that being something that's not drainable, that's a wetland area, I don't know if the footings would have to be deeper or more complicated, or geopiers might need to be used.
Yeah.
But that's something for us to consider, that if we're going to use land in Minnesota, we need to use it for its highest, best value. And I think using good tillable farmland that is drained, and I see it out particularly out in Lester Prairie on Highway 7, it was a great piece of farmland, almost perfectly flat, and they've got up at least 20 acres worth of, I believe it's a CSG. So nonetheless, I don't want to take up all the time. Members, you have any additional questions for other testifiers? We put these two gentlemen on the hot seat pretty good. Senator Pratt?
Thank you. I wanted to go over with Mr. Evans on his calculation, just, and it's a real simple question. So we talked about, he had the chart that showed the avoided gas, and then I got a little confused on the explanation on the environmental costs, where you said it seemed like we were double counting the gas credit, and if we're displacing utility grade solar with community solar, are we seeing those? So one, I think, two-part question. One, are we double counting gas? Two, if we are replacing utility solar instead of gas with community solar, then not, if I understood your point, we're not seeing the savings on the avoided gas generation, but we're also not seeing the savings then on the avoided.
This is an updated one.
On the avoided environmental savings as well. Is that correct?
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair and members, first of all, I should explain because, you know, when we talk about the $125, $110 to $125, we talk in terms of levelized costs. These costs for these contracts increase over time. So just so we're comparing apples to apples, we talk about levelized costs. So when we talk about $40 for utility scale and $125, so when other testifiers have talked about $90 or $100, they're looking at the initial cost, not the levelized cost. That's perfectly fine, too. You just have to make sure you're comparing apples to apples when you look at these costs. So the point with the value of solar calculation, Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, is this is not a measure of any cost at all. This is one of the problems with the program. As the testifiers have gotten up here and talked about, we could save costs here and save costs there. The fact is the price that is set has absolutely nothing to do with the cost of providing the service. It's the value that is calculated because we adopted this, you know, what I think is a failed experiment of the value of solar. So they're trying to measure the value of the energy. It would sort of be like if the utility walked into your house and said, I want to find out what the value of our electricity is. How much would you pay me not to shut you off completely? It might be more than the rate that we charge, because the rate we charge is based on our cost, not based on the value that you would place on being in the dark. And so this is a calculation of value, and it's based on the false assumption that the solar gardens, the community solar, is coming in to displace a gas plant. And that might have been true back in 2013 when all solar was so far out of the market, nobody was considering putting it on their system. But today, because the price of solar is so low, we are putting it on our system. What happened in our last rate case, or our last resource plan, for example, was we proposed hundreds of megawatts of solar energy, utility-scale solar, and the PUC said no. And the reason they said no was because they knew we had this stuff coming down the road, and they knew we were going to have to take this, and they knew we were going to have to pay the price. So they said, don't go build new stuff. Don't go build utility-scale stuff. You got this stuff coming. The problem with what I was talking about with the bars is if you assume that the value of this community solar energy is that you won't have to build a gas plant, it's a false assumption because it's not displacing gas. It's just displacing cheaper solar. And if you're going to say your customers should pay $37 for the value of not polluting with a gas plant, they're not getting that either, because we're not avoiding a gas plant with this energy. We're just avoiding cheaper solar. So this was not, you know, back in 2013, it wasn't that, you know, somebody did something dumb or that somebody didn't, you know, that somehow somebody was tricked into this. It's all because the price of solar has come down so far that we're doing it on the natural. We're doing it in the marketplace. We're buying it because it's a good deal for our customers. But we won't buy it at $40 if we're forced to buy it at $125.
Senator Pratt?
Thank you. But if I calculate right, based on that comment, it looks like on this value of solar, we've overvalued solar, community solar, in that $92 then is based on the assumption both the environmental cost as well as the generation cost are based on the as you called it, false premise of replacing gas. So it seems like that's how we're getting closer to that $40, as I see it. Or are there other environmental costs or other environmental values that aren't being captured in that assumption?
Mr. Evans?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, no, because a utility-scale solar plant, utility-scale solar has the exact same environmental profile as community solar. So it doesn't change that. What would change is that blue bar at the bottom, instead of being $55, which is the avoided cost of a gas plant would be about $40, which is the avoided cost of utility scale solar. So the value of solar might be, for community gardens, the $40 avoided cost. And then if we have this argument that there's actually a transmission savings of $18, then you might say that the real value of community solar is more like $58, not $125. Mm-hmm. But so that's the difference. But in terms of that purple bar, there is no difference because it's all solar energy.
Thank you. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Evans. I'm wondering if the maybe this question is kind of being implied. Maybe the task that we have is not to eliminate community solar gardens entirely, but to go back to the PUC to recalculate the true value of solar with, you know, just update it with current reality. How would you respond to that?
Mr. Evans?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, that would certainly be an improvement, but I'll go one better. As I mentioned in my testimony, there's two ways we really fix the cost of energy in our system. We've been doing it for decades. One is we put it out for bids. So, for example, if you said in the next year we're going to accept 100 megawatts of community solar gardens, garden developers, make a bid. Give us your best proposal. That helps drive the cost down. Now, it's still going to be more expensive than utility scale, I assume, because I've got all these transaction costs and all these extra people they're hiring to do it, and we got to help the farmers with XL Energy customers' money and all that sort of thing. So it's still going to be higher, but at least we would have driven the cost down by making them compete with one another for the ability to come in. Right now, they're just like a public utility. They have a guaranteed buyer, and they have a guaranteed price. And yet they don't have to do what we have to do to get our rate set, which is disclose our costs. The other way to do it is essentially to do as we do, which is come in and show us your cost. Show us what it's really going to cost. Let's make sure you're being prudent. Let's make sure you're not overpaying farmers. Let's make sure you're not overpaying solar providers. Let's make sure you're not hiring twice as many people as you need. Let's do all the things that public utilities do to show that we are making prudent expenditures to provide the energy for our customers. And if the price is higher and the policymakers feel like we're getting some benefit for that higher price, well, that's fine. But I think the fallacy was trying to base a price on this sort of esoteric idea of value, as opposed to what we traditionally do, which is either base the price on a bid price that's competitively bid so we know that everybody has an incentive to keep their costs down, or do like utilities do, come in and show us your costs and let us examine them and make sure you're being prudent and do it that way. That would be, in my idea, a better suggestion.
Senator Dibble, we're getting rather close to a preview of Tuesday. So there are other options that are going to be on the table, and Mr. Evans has probably gotten rather close to other options that are going to be presented to us, and this is a preview of things to come. Right. Senator Dibble.
I'm so excited for Tuesday. I kind of agree with you, but I also disagree with you because you know, avoided cost is a real thing, and you know, to listen to you, one might conclude that true value of solar is not a legitimate or valid measure. I think about it in the same way I think of, you know, conservation and efficiency. When utilities avoid having to go to great expense, for example, you know, building new plants or creating a lot of new generation or transmission, et cetera, that's a real savings to the system, to ratepayers, et cetera. So I kind of disagree with you and agree with you in some sense, but you know, it's hard to measure things that don't happen, and that's sometimes a challenge in conservation and efficiency or trying to value. You know, true value of solar. Some of these are slightly intangible, like, you know, proximity to load, kind of hard to value, but there is some actual value. But I did have another question.
If I could just respond to that, Senator,
Mr. Evans.
It's a very good point. Mm-hmm. But again, when we do our conservation programs, it goes through an extensive public process at the Public Utilities Commission to make sure that there's a cost-benefit analysis and that the cost justifies the benefit. And that's not what happens here. So, yeah, we could go in and make sure that we're getting the value for our money and all of that, but it's got to be a more public process than what's happening today.
Senator Dibble?
Thank you. I do not disagree with that, and it sounds like a new look at recalibrating the value of solar is important, so maybe we'll have more discussion about that
Mr.
on
Evans
Tuesday.
Mr. Evans wrote this down. He agreed with you.
And, Senator Dibble. But I did want to ask about, I think it was Mr. Abbey who talked about a 65% discount. Mr. Evans, I wanted you to respond. So Mr. Abbey can help me remember what he said, and I'm wondering how you respond to his arguments that there's something about a 65% discount if a garden doesn't fully subscribe. I didn't quite remember what that was. There was a declining value of solar that is already being contemplated and anticipated. The renewable energy credits, are you benefiting from those? And he talked about the $120 million in upgrades to the system. I assume that's in substations and transmission lines and stuff, as well as the money that's spent to help study the system, probably the distribution system, to be able to receive solar.
Senator, on the last item, the $120 of upgrades are caused by the solar gardens. They're not caused by our system. This argument was made in front of the PUC just within the last couple of weeks, and the commission, essentially shut the argument down. Those are costs that are incurred because of the community solar gardens. Any benefit that accrues to the Xcel Energy customers is incidental at best. So we don't, to hook these customers up. One thing you have to keep in mind, this is the only energy source we get that is not planned through resource planning. We just take it if it comes. And so it puts a burden on the system of careful planning for our customers. And one of those is that there are costs. We have to upgrade stuff in order to allow them to interconnect, and we charge that cost to them because they're the ones that are causing the cost to occur.
Just before we go on to Mr. Abbey, I just want to remind members that we are over right now. I'm going to go until 2:45, and then we will put this bill on the table and come back on Tuesday, because everything we've heard today is going to apply to everything we talk about on Tuesday. So, Mr. Abbey.
Chairman, Senator Dibble, thank you so much. On the $120 million we've paid to date to upgrade Xcel's wires and substations, it's not the developers are complaining about that. We're not trying to undo that or complain or anything. It's true, under the current rules, those costs fall on us because we're the first person to show up to say, hey, we'd like that to be a three-phase. Our point is, once we put in the $120 million across the Xcel system, everyone along the wire benefits because now they get three-phase power instead of single-phase power. That's higher quality power that allows the farmer or the rural user to run motors, engines, chillers, refrigerators, pumps, all these sort of things at higher power quality. On the 64% discount, and that's looking against the 2018 VOS rate, which is the most recent that's been approved, that's the discount Xcel gets for all the power they buy where we don't have a subscriber. So this is an important element of the community solar program. After the legislature put the initial statute in place, the question fell to the commission of what the rate should be for power that doesn't have a subscriber. And they decided to give us the lowest rate possible. It's about a 3.5-cent rate. So Xcel is getting power from our generators at less than 4 cents today. That puts the onus, I think appropriately, on the developers to go out and fill up that garden. In fact, if we can't get 100% subscribers for that garden, our capital financiers won't put up the money to even build the garden. So if you look at the scope of all the applications submitted in the program to date, some 60 or 65% of applications have been canceled. That's the attrition rate. That's the risk, I think, as a private developer trying to go out there and convince enough people to support the project. If we can't get those subscribers, the project doesn't happen.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I think on the 64% discount, as I said, this energy is not planned for. This energy is not through our resource plan. It just comes on. If they can't find a subscriber, I would hope you wouldn't make us pay $125 for energy that they can't even find a subscriber for. Of course we get a discount. We don't we don't even really need the energy in the first place. So if you haven't got a subscriber to attribute it to, let us go build the $40 megawatt an hour energy instead of the $125 megawatt hour energy. So that discount is absolutely appropriate.
Senator Dibble?
And then, Mr. Chair, to the other two points that Mr. Abbey brought up, value of solar is declining, projected to decline in the future on some sort of a schedule, A and B. The renewable energy credits, are those actually being utilized and sold?
Mr. Abbey?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble. Go ahead.
Sorry, let me clarify. The 10 to 20% decline that I think Excel's filings that the Commission show that they expect in the value of solar, that's because what Excel's reporting is that the capacity of these gardens, the ability to generate throughout the day, is higher than they initially estimated. Now, under the strange value of solar, we actually get developers actually get less money going forward if we over if we come with a capacity that's better. Now, capacities are going up is because we're innovating. We've got single access trackers allow us to track the sun from the day to the night. Storage is potentially coming online pretty soon. That's another way to firm up that. We've got smart inverters. We've been working with Excel and the Commission for the past number of years trying to get smart inverter functionality to allow us to deliver more value. And then going forward, people are talking about dispatchable solar. And that's also, I think, on the table in the next few years if we could work together to unlock that value for developers and for ratepayers.
Mr. Evans, you had something additional to add?
Mr. Chair, the first part of your question, Senator Dibble, I've now drawn a blank on what it was.
It was the declining value of solar and then the renewable energy credits.
The renewable Mr. energy Evans. Credits. So, the renewable energy credits are just another example for why this solar is displacing other solar. Renewable energy credits is how we meet our renewable energy standard and our solar energy standard in Minnesota. And it was specifically provided in the law that when we take on community solar, we get to keep the renewable energy credits. And so it's just knocking energy off of our solar mandate. It just happens to be more expensive energy. So, the energy credit, and we do utilize the energy credits under the rules in order to meet our renewable energy standards. As far as the declining of the value of solar, yes, the value of solar is coming down. It's coming down, essentially for the reasons that Mr. Abbey stated, but it's still, more than three times what we could get the solar for in the market, two to three times what we get the solar for in the market. So the question is, what are we getting for that? And are we, are our customers, why should our customers be paying that high price when we could get the energy cheaper? So it's really all about the price and all about the value. It's not Xcel Energy customers' responsibility to bail out the farmers by overpaying for land. It's the purposes of this is to provide solar energy to our customers, and that's the bottom line where we're just simply spending too much.
Senator Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll just in the interest of time, I'll say most of my comments for Tuesday, but I just wanted to make a point and maybe make a request to you. I think fascinating discussion, obviously, and I agree a lot with what Mr. Evans has to say, but I do feel like there's an opportunity here for a constructive solution as we go forward, and maybe we'll hear more about that on Tuesday, and I'm willing, certainly, to entertain that. But when the law was put into place back in 2013, obviously this was a mandate for Xcel, but we gave other public utilities the option and the opportunity to participate. And I think it might be valuable if on Tuesday we could set aside, two or three minutes just to hear from, and I'll just say Minnesota Power, just to give us their perspective about CSG that perhaps they have in their service territory. And how that operates in comparison.
We will invite them and any muni or co-op that wants to come on in.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it.
Senator Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Abbey, I wanted to ask if you'd comment on the number that was given, I believe, by Mr. Evans on 88.9% of benefits going to commercial customers. Is that consistent with how your developers are making their installs, and would you comment on that, please?
Mr. Abbey?
Mr. Chair, Senator Matthews, of course. Yes, I think the most recent report from Excel, who is the administrator of the program, is that something like 90% of all subscribers are residential. But if you look at a capacity basis, we know large customers use more capacity, larger subscriptions than residential. On a capacity basis, it's more like 11%. Now, there's also a small business category that's in there. And then of that 89%, as you say, a lot of that, I think something like half of that goes to school districts, local governments, groups that we're very happy to partner with to allow them to bring more solar on the grid, contribute to Excel meeting its our its renewable goal standards. And then that school district, that local government, they're able to improve their budget and potentially pass savings on to everyone in their community. So it is, I think, a cost-effective way to deliver those benefits to the community more broadly.
Senator Matthews. Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that. Would you also let me know of your willingness or your industry's willingness to look at some of the other remedies that have been suggested, such as having to have competitive bids for installing these CSGs, or by opening up your costs for public review? Could you comment on those two?
Mr. Abbey?
Mr. Chair, Senator Matthews. We actually did go through a cost discovery process, I think it was 2 years ago. The Department of Commerce led that process. They requested cost information, including breakdowns from all the developers. Commerce then put that into a proposal that they shared back to Excel and the Public Utilities Commission. I would argue that the value of solar process itself is a price discovery mechanism. It's very thorough, very robust. It's been probably hundreds, if not thousands, of hours to date to get to that value of solar number, and I think there's ways to continue improving it as well.
Wrap up, Senator Goggin.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee members. Great discussion today, and you know, at the end of the day, I brought this bill forward because my constituents are Xcel Energy customers, and with what's gone on with local taxes, school referendums that have passed, you know, anything we can do to levelize the playing field to make it as fair and equitable for Xcel Energy customers as any other customer to have a good, a fair rate in their electric bill. That's why I'm here, and I'm looking out for my constituents and the rest of the folks in the Xcel Energy ratepayers, and you know, I really hope we can come to a good conclusion on this.
Thank you, Senator Goggin. With that, members, Senate File 713 is laid over for future consideration. Again, members, we will have a continued discussion, which a lot of comments from senators are leading right into where we're going on Tuesday. And then we will make some decisions after that. Coming up Thursday, we will have Senator Dietzick's bill, and also Senator Tomasoni has brought forward an interesting bill on masked phone numbers, and that would be for telemarketers are using masked phone numbers, and we're going to have a little discussion about that one. So, and also Senator Dibble, your solar on the schools. Just to let you know, we started working through the numbers. I can say with a great deal of certainty you will have $3 million worth of RDA money for that. That's the current thought pattern, but I know you wanted a little larger number than that, but it is bigger than the $2 million that you were offered last year. So I look at it as 50% more than what you asked for last year. So with that, members, thank you, and this meeting is adjourned.